We are in Champions League, man.
That was my
dilly din, dilly don. Come on.
Ancora Messi. Gol.
Into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has won it.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
This is the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast with Gary Kernin.
Aguero.
Hello, coaches. Welcome back to another Modern Soccer Coach interview. Today, we are joined by Liam McCartan, coach analyst at Swindon Town FC. Usually around analysis and elite level coaching, it's about teams and systems and shapes. This one is about how to improve individuals alongside teams, system shapes and analysis. Liam has brilliant insight. If you enjoy it, which I'm sure you will, please make sure you like, please make sure you subscribe. And if you're looking at some more analysis resources, please check out our new Modern Soccer Coach online analysis certificate available on the link below, modernsoccercoach.com/analysis. Thanks so much for all the support. Here's Liam. Enjoy.
Liam, thank you so much for joining us today on the Modern Soccer Coach podcast. Excited to have you on.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Brilliant. No, great to have you on a brilliant topic. Improving individuals alongside analysis. When we talk about analysis systems today, and there's a lot of talk about, as we all know, a lot of it pertains to the collective and team shape, team build out, press, and all that there. And we're going to talk today about improving and impacting individuals around that. It's something that it's a space that you're getting stuck into at the minute, and I really, really want to hear your views. So my first question is a bit of a hot topic one. People will say that at the highest level, yeah, it's not about developing players. Coaches, I've heard coaches say this, it's not about developing players at the pro level. It's about winning games. Now, you obviously, I'm not even going to ask you if you believe that. You obviously challenge that. Let's put the case forward initially to say why that is not true.
Well, it all comes down to your club ethos as well as everything else. But if the club, especially at my level at League Two and different levels I've worked at, if you can sell one player that can keep the club sustainable over the next potential year, 2 years, then it's going to keep, first of all, the manager in the job, number one. It's going to keep the club afloat, and then you're going to be able to sustain a real level of competition within the squad and belief in the squad that you may be able to get another player through the door in the next window with that belief of pushing them on with their development and then overall the team. So when you think about development of players and winning games, it has to really come into the club you're in, the environment, but also the breeding of success, because winning breeds winning, and it's the same with success. If you're going to get one player out the door to a better move, the players all around them have two options. They're either going to be down about it because players think they deserve to go themselves, or they're going to push themselves on. And if you look through different clubs, the amount of players where one player is gone and there's going to be a huge gaping hole, and they think, oh, how are they going to finish, do better? Then it doesn't happen. Like the highest level, is the best example is PSG last night. And I know they didn't get the win, but with Messi, the greatest player of all time, he's left and everyone thought there was this gaping hole. And a signing of Vitinha from Wolves comes in and you're thinking, oh, I don't know about that. But look at them reaching the Champions League semi-final, and it brings the group closer together, but it also adds value to the whole group and belief in the process of a club.
Great start. Interesting, very, very interesting. The aspect of, because the sell-on model is now very, very big in the US, obviously as the clubs are starting to get structured now, and European clubs are now starting to look at American players. So when do you think those conversations around goal setting should start for individual players?
I think it comes down to a lot of things. When we're talking about the earlier player around the 8 to 12 year old, like, first of all, are they enjoying it? What's their environment with their coach? What's the environment of logistics? You can't let school and football have to be hand in hand at that age. And it's really like the family situation of travel and stuff like that. Because if you have a high level player that only has to travel 10 minutes down the road, you're going to get the best out of him when he plays on a Saturday or Sunday. Whereas if you've got a 9-year-old traveling an hour and a half there and back, so 3 hours on the road, his energy level is going to be so low by the time he gets to training, his performances are going to dip and go from there. Then when you get on into the older, the youth development stage of maybe 12 to 16, that's when you start thinking about what's best for the individual in terms of that age group to go higher. Then you start looking at the players around them. What makes the unit and then the team evolve around the player? Because if you're the best player on your team at that age, it's time to take yourself out of that small pond and go bigger, especially around the 14 to 16. That 2 years is so crucial, not to think that you've got no more improvements to make. It's time to like really push yourself, in my opinion, and go higher. And that's why we have a small like development group here at where I'm working in League Two, with like the best academy players come up to the first team as much as possible from that ages. So they realize quite quickly that they have to improve their everything, essentially to facilitate that gap and hopefully bridge the gap smaller with that. But then when you get to the 16, 17, 18s, 19s, you should be banging on the door to be involved with first team. And if you're not doing that, you need to maybe drop your level to go to a different first team in order to do so, in my belief, because those are the ages where you have to be on the pitch on a Saturday or Sunday across the white line, doing all your fundamental work, and then working on a Monday to Friday to help improve that Saturday Sunday work. But at the end of the day, nobody pays to see you Monday to Friday. They only pay you on a Saturday and in front of the crowds, and that's when you make your money, and that's when you're worth all the development, all the hard work, all the nutrition you put into yourself and the development you put in. Those are the days that you need to perform, and everything needs to be good. Really, for me, everything needs to be pushed towards that. So I don't think I've quite answered your question per se, but
no,
it comes down to each individual in terms of when that time is right. But as long as they're pushing up into a better environment, or if they're making a sideways or backwards step on paper, are they getting the most amount of minutes to get their experience up? That would be probably a more clear view of it.
I was listening to the overlap this morning, and Gary Neville, have you listened to this one?
I did. Yeah.
Very good, isn't it? And I actually thought I knew Gary Neville's career pretty well, but and I've heard everything he has to say, but I obviously haven't. The piece on the under 15, he didn't make the Greater Manchester under 15 team. Blew me away. But it's also really interesting that, like, I wonder today, if a player doesn't make that today, Liam, do you think, not even from the player's perspective, but almost from this like accelerated development models we have, you know, that resilience that Roy Keane said initially, it was like, oh, made you stronger.
Like, yeah.
Are those opportunities, you think, still available today for kids to maybe learn from those? Or do you think the game's just moving so fast that those kids can be left behind?
I do think there's a lot to be said about having that resilience, having that drop off. I think I feel it's better for players and for people to get that, maybe the sad news and the disappointment news around the 15-16 mark, because then they miss it. Then they might go a year out. They might go 18 months out, or 18 months playing at a lower level, find their enjoyment. They may not have that development stage in them. But when you look at players, especially over here in England, when they're released at 18, 19, all they think of themselves are footballers. They've missed out on being a person. They've missed out on realizing who they are as a person with that. So having that resilience and almost tasting defeat before the victory, I think yes, there's a lot of accelerated programs, and it's good to have that. Best practice is always a good thing, but if bad news happens, it's all about that individual. How hungry are they to come back? Because there is going to be pathways there for them. It's going to be up to them to take it, and it will be a road less traveled, but it could be one that's very fruitful as well. You just have to have that inner desire to do so.
The piece there you talk about the person developing, this is it's really, really complex space. I understand that. So it's not one size fits all. But what I find is that environments today becoming more professional, and you're looking for that person then to to get a real personality character at 18, 19 years of age. But at 14, 13, 14, they were doing, you know, morning readiness saps, and they've been doing the pre and the post strength. They're so structured. Do you think that the more structure in an environment, perhaps it does take a little bit away from the carry-on that might have existed before that, you know?
100%. 100%. I've no doubt about that. Look at different players now. Jack Grealish, he's not as spontaneous on the ball, even Jeremy Doku now and stuff like that. But that's when it comes to, that's the real top level. But even I remember times back at my school, and I was always known as a cheeky chap, and I'll always have that in my own persona and things like that. But it was like, that's what makes people at the same time. You have to, and I've always been mentally secure because I'm able to speak out. And if I acted out in a bad manner in my school days, people knew something was up. Whereas now these days, we've got so many people deciding if they're in a good or a bad mood. It's kind of a hindrance. But I think with these things, it's going to come in waves. I think we're going to get to a point where we're so worried about what people's mood are, we're actually not in the mood. We don't even know. Everyone's going to be 6 or 7 all the time. So it'll get to a stage when these readiness apps and stuff like that will change. And we'll get back to talking, because everything comes in cycles. Even now, in terms of football, we're going back to defending a 4-4-2. So everything in life will come back around. I do think that we're going to hit a turning point in terms of these things, and we're going to get back to having flair players and spontaneous moments. And the way coaching is going, we're going back in that way anyway, because there's so many structures. The best way to beat a structure is almost do that 3-2 build, stick a fullback in midfield. What are you going to do? Are you going to come in? You're going to come out? You're going to create 1v1s, aren't you? And it's the same with your development. You're going to get one player that just... Like I remember when I was at Stoke, I had a little player, and I just was a joy to coach. And all of a sudden, half of my sessions were like about structure and getting things in place. But then I do so much element about getting the best out of this boy and the players around him to enjoy it. How many 1v1s, how many skills can you do? Because he could do them all. He had probably better technical ability than me at the time. But it just shows that you need to give these boys a platform and just let them be themselves.
Yeah, there's a great story with Arsene Wenger. It was actually an Irish thing. It was off the ball. Emmanuel Petit was an off the ball. This is way back, years and years ago. I could never find this interview again, but it blew me away when I heard it. Petit was talking about his time at Arsenal, or sorry, his time at Monaco. And Wenger came in on a Sunday morning, and Petit was at the training. He was only one in, and first one there. And Wenger was like, "Oh, did you go out last night?" And Petit was like, "Oh, no, boss, you know, bed early, you know, refueled, got bed early, got up early, going at it again." And Wenger was like, "You should have went out last night." And his reasoning behind that was, you're going to be met with these challenges and questions and decisions later on in your career. If you don't know what you're about and you don't experience it a little bit when you're young, you'll never.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's different level stuff there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the next level. And it's just knowing, you know, you need that little joker in the pack as well. And you just need to have, stories to look back on.
Two things. One, elite player development seems to be a lot of idealistic models today with, hey, 7-11, we need to have this profile. Maybe it fits the data. Maybe it fits the club philosophy. No, very, very few radars that I've looked at over the years have actually been filled out. You know, most of them are missing large pieces. So when you reverse engineer that and you're looking at a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old, you're starting to integrate and engage them in video analysis. At what stage do you think that it becomes strength-based? And at what stage do you think you start to trade off some of those weaknesses? And how do you manage that?
Straight from the off. The best thing you can do is compliment sandwich every single time. It the basics are the best with that one. Like, no one wants to hear what they're bad at, but everyone wants to hear what they're good at. And it could even be, if this player has a lot of areas to improve, you might say, "Oh, you're always smiling." That can be the first one. And there's never a bad thing when you're always smiling. He could be the moodiest boy and he comes in, but you're always smiling.
That's a very Irish thing to say, isn't it?
But it's right. You have to like engage them with a compliment, come in maybe a little bit harder, and then finish with a compliment. And you just, and then it might take, every boy is different, every girl is different, but what they'll do is they'll like start thinking, oh, you said that about, oh, I need to do my left foot more. I'm a center forward and I don't take any shots. So how am I supposed to score goals? And like, that's the easiest one ever. When you're talking about like a center forward, and when you go to position specific. So when you're talking about a center forward, every center forward wants to score more goals. My thing has never, ever been, how many goals can you score? It's like, oh, you haven't even had any shots. Like, how can you improve your shots? And then that's like, that's how we get on to like the shot maps, and that's coming later, I'd imagine. But you just like, you talk about how you can get there in your process. But when you're talking about young lads and things like that, it's like they've been used to phones now. Their screen time is through the roof. And instead of combating that by saying, get off your phone and go out. So the blend that I've done is like, right, what we're talking about now is position specific stuff to you. And then when I speak to the coach with Ireland and stuff like that, goes, well, I gave them a task before they came in of looking at age-related stuff about anything. So it could be, could be talking about a winger saying, oh, I want you to look at Neymar's skills. Obviously, Neymar is not the ideal role model, but he's a flair player. Kids will look at him, he'll watch the full video. First 10 minutes of the session, can we do skills with ball manip? And then after that, if we're working on 1v1s, can I see it? All of a sudden, you see they're bringing their home life of screen time, but it's actually started their learning phase onto the pitch and afterwards. And like when you want to like get the review at the end, what did you learn today? If they bring it all in together, goes, oh, I did my Neymar skill. It goes, was it the right moment? Did you get a player 1v1? Was he square up? Could you do the move because of that? And all of a sudden, you're at that stage, especially with maybe 11, 10, 13-year-olds, you're throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. But in the same breath, in their mind, it might all loop together. And then it's really about that. It's really about how can you combine their natural environment to yours. And like, I feel now at my age and my profile, I'm in the middle of an older coach not understanding and a younger player also not understanding, but it's different ways. So it's for me, I feel like in a very unique and almost privileged position, because I feel like I can understand it, but it's just getting it on the grass and seeing what they can learn.
Hello, coaches. We'll take a quick break here. If you are a fan of analysis as a coach, or you're an analyst and you're looking at upskilling yourself and working at the highest level, please check out our new online course, Modern Soccer Coach, Advanced Tactical Analysis and Coaching, how coaching and analysis both work together. We've got 13 modules total on pressing data, philosophy, packing data, set piece analysis, match coding, game model design, scouting frameworks, and how the whole game is broken down. We've also got an assignment at the end that you get your certificate after. We've also got live support option as well. So if you have a question, or if you want to chat about something that's in the modules, you can drop me a message and we can talk back and forth about what you're experiencing or any questions. Really, really good interactive way to learn more about analysis and enjoy the process. ModernSoccerCoach.com/analysis. The link is below in the notes as well. Please check it out. Really appreciate the support and hope to see you on the course.
Of coach analysts, but also maybe a hybrid of a generation as well, right? Where you're entering the space as phones are now becoming not even accessible. Phones are becoming dependent, right? So
yeah,
I mean, and coaches, it actually annoys me a little bit that we don't talk about this. As you know, we talk a lot about mental health, we talk a lot about recovery, we talk a lot about the physical side, but we don't talk about the thing that is dopamine relied upon every single day, mostly for non-communicative reasons, even though it was built as a communication. You give away one little secret there about kind of like, okay, well now we'll focus on the phone. How do you advise coaches who maybe aren't as young as yourself to be like, all right, like what if I let them all on it, nobody speaks to each other, you know, like what are some of the things you've seen around these environments that work?
One of them is do a 6-week plan. And this is what I tried to introduce and actually did introduce in, it's Stoke, my time there. 6 week plan, everyone in groups of units. So obviously defenders and goalkeepers together, midfielders and attackers. Each group has to bring in, have to talk, first of all. Well, talk about it, go home, find a video on YouTube. Presume all of them have a YouTube safe with their parents' permission. They have to find a video for the whole group to watch and the coach to watch for the next session. Then if it's whatever it is, the coach then has to incorporate into the next week's session. So it's almost like the players are telling the coach what to do per se, but really it's just homework for the players. It actually, in a way, engages the coach. So the coach might think, he might watch the video and go over there. And then there's all little guidelines you can do. The video can't be longer than 2 minutes long. It has to be involved an attacking element or a defensive element. If the goalkeepers and defenders are doing attacking, you say, why are you doing attackers and defending? And you ask the question, and it goes, oh, we have to do a defending one. So it gets them engaged, talked. And what you find, what I found at Stoke was my group of players weren't actually friends, which is a tough element to be, because they're all in this elite environment, which they were, and it was very high level for 12-year-olds. But how do I engage them outside of the work? Because some are from Manchester, some are from Stoke, some are driving an hour and a half away to be there. So I'm trying to engage them 10, 15 minutes before a session in terms of actually communicating, because they're not allowed their phones once they got on the pitch, and then bringing it all in together. And then I'm asking them afterwards what we do. Then the video will come out. I'll send that link. I'll obviously verify the link, of course. I'll then send it out on a thing called, we have Spond. I don't know what you have, but it's a WhatsApp for parents and stuff. Out it goes. I'm doing my session in 2 days' time. I incorporate that in first 10 minutes, and it's like a perfect blend. Next week, midfielder's turn. Week after, attacker's turn. And all of a sudden, the players are more engaged in your session because they think they've done it. You're engaging in what they want to learn because they've provided it. And then it only takes 10 minutes out of your session. Then you can go back to whatever you wanted to do on your club's curriculum or whatever.
Very interesting. You're also putting together, it was position specific, but it's not, right? Like it's a wide range here that you can manipulate that position specific to work on this against this. And you become a bit creative in that area.
Exactly. Then you can go into your skill acquisition in terms of like your 1v1s and stuff like that. Then you go into like team and structure if you want to like delve a little bit deeper in terms of like what's a 4-4-2 compared to a 3-5-2. And then you can go into more like other things in terms of young psychology work, depending on your age group. You could start giving out elements of maybe the Jordan Henderson high performance podcast or like stuff like that. Like obviously it's a little bit older for the, it depends on your age profile, but you can hit almost the four corners in what you're trying to do with little bits. And everyone, and these days, when we talk about the processes of like the elite environment of the pathways, like everyone's a 24/7 athlete at the moment. So it's engaging the other, you might only have them like maybe 12, 13 hours a week, even less. And I was listening to your other podcast, what you've done. You're like, you might only have them for 10 hours a week on a quarter of a pitch. So how are you engaging them for when you have them on Saturday with a full length pitch? So you're trying to creep as much into your lads as possible. So how can you engage them as much with that?
Yeah, get as much bang for your buck as you can. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Another kind of hot topic with technology, information, analysis is this aspect of, hey, listen, I think a lot of people are cautious about giving, not cautious about it on a Saturday when they're, when the kids are sitting there for 25 minutes and there's a monologue going on, but somehow cautious about analysis during the week where you don't want to give too much information. Is there anything that you use for, you know, you've talked there about individually kind of designing different ways for the players to get engaged with it. Are you ever worried about too much of the analysis side and maybe overloading at any of those age groups?
No. And the reason is, as soon as they're disengaged, they're gone. So everybody's different with that. So the reason I'm not worried is like it all comes down to how you learn. So some people will learn by being told, some will be learned by visual, and some will be learned by reading it. So I'm dealing with maybe 16, 17, even 20 plus players and in that age group as well. You might even have more. When I was like Ireland, I have a profile of maybe 25 players, 30 players that are sometimes called in, sometimes not. So you're dealing with like disappointment as well. But when you have all these things, like you're trying to hit as many, you're trying to nail the hammer on as many as possible. Some it will resonate with, some won't. But it's all about engaging and hopefully bringing them again, as we said, once they go past the white line. And like in, I've been in a privileged position and also disprivileged in terms of I've been a little bit ahead of everyone at, in terms of my job role, in terms of I've worked for the national team, but I don't work with the kids on a week-to-week basis. So all I'm trying to do is engage the kids to then go to his coach and then hopefully like separate that. And if the coach comes to me, I'll give them anything they want. I don't mind with that, especially if it's improving that. And I'll do the same when I'm over here in the UK. It's all about each individual improving themselves as a person, learning, and then hopefully bringing across the white line in what they do.
There was a really interesting post shared during the week, Dan Abrams on Wayne Rooney, and he's talking about, they're talking about practice, and he was saying that the sports science are kicking people off and, you know, looking at loads. So it's tough today to grab a bag of balls and go down and do all that there. And I could see Dan's point that communication across the board helps, but also it is a tough space to navigate where, especially if it's an attacking player, you know, repetition on, you know, there's a great line, isn't Mourinho, says too much water kills the flower or something like that there to Damien Duff. Like, you know, your ball striking, hitting 50 balls. How do you work around? Like, is that something where you do a lot of positional work, you do a lot of functional work? Are the biggest person you talking? Do you, what's your level of communication with sports science?
It's funny you say that. So I've been at Swindon now 2 years. The first year, me and the sports scientists had a fantastic relationship. I have a fantastic relationship before I go any further with the new sports scientists. I'll tell you how. With the turnover of staff, naturally, the other sports scientist left. He went to Colchester, it happens. But the new sports scientist was coming in. He was coming down from Dundee. And the first thing I did was, I was like, whatever happens, me and you live in the same house. Number one, saves me dough. And number two, saves you dough as well. And then we're going to be working together every single day, drive together, save everything. But really, in my heart of hearts, I wanted to have that relationship nailed on, almost 24/7 conversations. My missus at the time, which we've since broke up, wasn't very happy. But sometimes you have to make these calls and that better yourself and better things. But I moved in. We moved in together, and I have conversations on the way to work every single day. I want to do this. Why do you want to do that? Because of this. What can you do? And go from there. And I know not everybody in football can have the privilege of just moving in with their sports scientist. But it just, first, like we've fallen out so many times over different things. But the main takeaways that I have from it and listening to that podcast the moment and coverage was, every player wants to do extras on a Thursday and a Friday. Every single player wants to, because the tapering of the session is down. They feel they haven't done enough in the session, so they want to do banger balls, feel like they're getting their extra out of it. But the reason it's tapered down is to be ready for the Saturday, quite simply. So you need to do your extras on a Monday and Tuesday. But how do you like scratch that itch? And it's simple. Well, it's not simple, but you just turn things into a competition. So you've only got five, best out of five. You versus the goalkeeper. There you go. Then that means you only got five ball strikes. Then if you want, and then at best, I might push it to five each side. So it's 10, but that's cut off, done. Whereas the idea of a bag of balls is like, there's no number on it. There's no coach with you. It's just repetitive striking, but then it's not deliberate practice. You might have someone like Wayne Rooney, you do that for an hour and a half, won't affect him, but you might have someone who's injury prone. That 50 balls, he hasn't hit 50 balls in a week. And Mark Coyler, the sports scientist, says to me, and he goes, well, you said you want to do 10 shots on a Friday. When have you ever seen Charlie Austin do 10 shots in one game? And I'm like, okay, you're right. So that means I make it more game related. So I'd say if Charlie's best, or like whoever I'm working with, might have six shots. I was like, the best you've ever done in the last 10 games is six shots. So we're going to do six clear actions of you shooting. And then we're going to bring that to Saturday. Then the player can't come back to you. And he goes, if he misses three, he's like, no, I can't come in. I haven't scored. Then what you do then is goes, right, we'll do heading then. I don't want to do heading. Well, if you want to score, if you get a chance on Saturday, you don't do heading. You know, and all of a sudden, I've ticked the sports science box. I've ticked the scratch the itch with the player. And hopefully I'm helping medical also by not having to go there. But it's a very interesting point. And it's like, it all comes down to having these conversations, learning as a coach, and then, but also more importantly, learn from the player. The player needs to learn also as well, because he just thinks, oh, I'm being pulled off. He doesn't have a clue. I want to learn. I want to get better. But like, if you can give him the clear and deliberate action, instead of doing 30 strikes, let's do five deliberate actions with pressure, with an opponent, with a goalkeeper. Then all of a sudden, they'll enjoy that more, and it'll only be 2.5 minutes long compared to 25 minutes out in the grass where they're slow. They're not really warmed up because they might have been stood around in an 11v11 practice. They might be doing 10 off the right, one off the left, and all of a sudden their left hammy pops. There's no pattern. And that's where sports scientists get edgy and nervous. It's not the extras, it's the what they're doing in the extras.
Yeah. It's very, very, that's very interesting there. Fair play to you for thinking, well, a little bit strategic there. I don't think a lot of analysts or coaches think that the relationship, usually it's head coach, sports scientist. Very rarely is it, okay, well, I'm going to have to understand what you're doing. But it just opens up. I mean, it's healthy for the whole organization, isn't it? That, which is what Dan was actually talking about in his post.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. Moving along nicely. Shot maps, something that data, something that might drive me a little bit mad. Data people have put shot maps up and then point to it and then say, listen, if such and such has more central shot locations, they will score more goals. Yeah. And at the start, I must admit, Liam, about 5 years ago, I was thinking, wow, that's amazing. Until you start going into the practicalities of it, and you say to player X, listen, deliver what blew you away, and player X isn't as impressed about it. And then you realize that, yeah, getting there is actually more of a challenge. And so how do you go through, again, probably maximizing those? How do you get that shot map and make it a bit more of a beneficial exercise around the education and again, the practicalities of it?
Shot maps are great, first of all, as a visual. You spot your trends, you spot your areas to improve from, especially in the one example with Kempe as well. He's like, he's got so many shots from outside the box, but someone say, oh, you need to have more inside the box. Whereas what I was saying to him, and I fully believe, is like, keep having them ones, but when you get a chance to take an extra touch to break the first one, you're going to have so many shots just on the edge, but on the inside of the edge, it's going to open up your range of shooting, and you can go back across the keeper. So it's, again, it comes down to conversations. It comes down to how open the player is, and that particular player, Dan Kemp, is one of the best I've been lucky enough to work with, and having that interest in it. But every single player, and especially the forward-thinking players and the ones that are thinking about their numbers, they'll engage on anything that helps them improve, anything. Whether it's like little cues like that, like where is the keeper right or left-handed, which is a new one that I've come across this year. It's like, does he prefer to go to his right side, for example? Little elements like that, and there's so many more. But it's just engaging with the player, seeing when he comes back with, when you first drop it into him, you might say, oh, what do you think about this? And if he nibbles or bites back, then the world's your oyster. Whereas others, I don't believe in any of that stuff. Then what you do is you don't give them the visual, and you just drop it into conversation. I wouldn't disengage at all. But I'd be like, someone like Charlie, for example, who's been there, done it, been at the very top. I was like, oh, Charlie, I think if you're more likely to get more chance from the back post headers this week, or make a run across the front. When you make those statements, none of them say, beyond the penalty spot. It's either it's around the six, but it's either back or front. Mm. So it's my way of saying you still need to get in there, but it's either in or back. And just like being within the biggest thing that I always try to say to all my forward thinking players is like be in the frame of the 6 yard box. Everyone says be in the frame of the goals, but it's 6 yard box opens up that extra angle for a goalkeeper that he can't get down to. Those low ones on the outside of him are so crucial. But yeah, it just comes down to engaging the player and seeing what they say and then reacting off that.
Mm. Very good, very good. Obviously, there's a, you know, you've gone from, or you're looking at the coach element of it, you're looking at the analysis element of it, talked about the engaging in the sports science conversations as well. How much then is there an aspect of the data side and the numbers and understanding mm-hmm. the world of Python and all those great
it's a whole new world, but if you don't get off on that bus stop, you're gonna miss your trip is the best way to describe it. You have to be on top of it, and especially at a club where we've got fantastic resources but at times limited, you have to use everything. And it's interesting you talk about like player development. This year I tried something different. I actually did intern development, and it was one of I can't say it's been completely successful, but it's been a mixed bag. So traditionally you always get an intern in university or straight out, no experience, but huge desire, wants to learn, willing to learn. This year I tried something slightly different. I got one intern out straight out of university, and I got four over the age of 25. So they have no experience in football, but they want to be in football. They've always been wondering what it was. One of them was a coach, never been an analyst, but wanted to learn about first team football. So he was my like coach analyst per se, in terms of actual like learning about the sessions and stuff. I had another one who was she was a school teacher. She'd just done a master's. She was looking to go into PhD, so she needed a large data set. And she came in and I was doing stuff like that. And then I had another one who was a diehard Swindon fan from the club, goes to every game home and away, but his normal business is in scraping data for marketing. So some have gone well, some have not. But I was speaking about Adam. He's done fantastic for us. He's used AI and Python, and he's written a script that he scrapes all the data from StatsBomb and Y Scout, and he creates a 21-page opposition scout book that I've always used ever since I've been an analyst. It approximately takes me maybe 8 hours nonstop to do. He's created that takes less than 35 seconds, like that.
Wow.
You press the button, you only need to change the name of the team, and it goes straight down. It just runs in the background. You think you're getting a virus on your laptop, but you're not. But it literally creates a start to bottom. Everything he does, he did it once. And all you have to do is change a thing. And he said, this is like you coaching, was he said to me. And I said, this is outrageous. This is fantastic. And he's helped us so much since then. He's fantastic. But if I didn't know about this or open up myself to this environment, to this entire world, I'd be spending, or me and my assistant would be spending hours getting these things. And it literally takes 35 seconds straight away, and it's ready to go to the players.
Bringing on four people sounds really, you know, like you've been really proactive, and and plus your intern, right? So is that five, or is the intern included in the four?
So I've got myself as coach analyst, which is like third first team coach and lead analyst, and I've got Bradley, who specializes in opposition analyst and training, and I've got four then on top of that. No, three on top of that, sorry. So Bradley's an assistant, gets paid, and the three others are completely unpaid, just in for experience.
Yeah, which I'm sure people will go, oh, well done. But that's a lot of work. Like, I've been in that area where you're trying to educate people when in the week of workflows of a football club, which is there's no time to do anything. Taking extra time to connect, educate, follow up, support, give feedback. How do you manage all that?
Definitely not easy, and it's definitely not a fully success story. I think in particularly one, Natalie, she's fantastic. but she wanted to do a PhD and she wanted co-funding, and then that's not something we could have offered. So I gave her all the data that I could, and then we've gone like separate ways halfway through the season, and like, it's something that I wish I could do more, but that's something on me as well. I should have done more and do that, but like, not every story is successful. Whereas I look, one of the best things I've done out of this year is Joe, the young lad who just came out of uni. He's had 3 interviews in the last 5 weeks and he's waiting to hear back. So I feel like I've given him a platform to go in and go out. And Adam's done amazing for me. Instead of me helping him, Adam's completely helped me. So like, me opening myself up to the interns, but also, as you said, having that open mindset of being willing to learn off them and vice versa is good, because even though it's been quite an unsuccessful season on the pitch for us, but quite good from a development and element of, we've got a lot of players like debuts and stuff like that. But Joe said it's been fantastic for him to learn, and he's using his experience. And the fact he's got a few interviews has been rewarding for me with that as well.
Yeah, similar to the player, the first thing you said about the player, about how they need to get the games and they need to get on that, through the week of working and then play for the money on the Saturdays. And it would be similar for an analyst and a coach to be, hey, you've got to get in that environment and you've got to feel it and you've got to learn how to deal with pressure and all those things. But of course, now you're getting, which is a great thing, more education, better education, but now a flood of people who want to do what you do. Mm-hmm. What recommendations would you have for someone who is in that last year of uni and wants to get into that area?
It's so important just to get as many views, objective views as possible. I see that yourself, you're doing your own course, which is fantastic. And you haven't even told me to plug you, but it's true. I remember like when I first started, I think I was 17, 18. I was playing at the time, but I was going down the coaching route, and I was like, so little opportunities as a coach at that age, at the level I wanted to be at. I did Pete Carroll's one, which was the videoanalyst.com, and that, I think it was £5 for that, but it was really basic, but it kicks you off and it starts you. And there's obviously, there's so many available at different price points, but the fact of the matter is you're getting access to wide-angle footage. You're seeing what the analyst sees, and you're making different points. You're like, can you see combination play? Like, everyone speaks about up back throughs and body shape to receive and all of these key actions. But when you start noticing them on the pitch, you start getting your brain. You're almost like you're a director in a movie watching someone else's movie. You pick up on these things and you're like, oh, that's what that's happening. And that's how you like break down the game. When you start seeing goals coming in, like, oh, how did that happen? You might, if you're like young and you're looking at the replays, well, he's done that, or like Phil Foden's dropped into a pocket and allowed a space to go beyond, and it's just learning the game slowly and goes from there. And you have to have that fundamentals first, and then you build your stuff from there. But like anything in life, and like, and as you like, you want to get into a particular career, you got to have a passion for it. You got to do so a lot of I think analysis is one of the hardest ones, because you can get a degree with it on it, but a coach might not like you, and you might not be that person, and you might not get a job in that for like 10 jobs. In the 11th interview, and you're half down, you might get the job then because someone gets it, because it's such a personality-based job. But you just have to have real mental resilience, know your stuff from a fundamental point of view, but also be in a position to learn. Because I think this is going slightly off topic on this one, but I've been at Swindon now 2 years, and I've had 5 managers, 2 interims. So there's an awful lot of change. And one of the first things that I've got in the last year with the 2 managers was, what do you do? And like, because my title has coach analyst, and they think, oh, are you an analyst? Are you a coach? What do you do? And I just explained that I do all the stuff that you don't want to do in a session. Like, I'll feed the balls into possessions. I'll count the scores and be referee for small side of games. But all I do at the end of a session is I'll take a pre-arranged player or pre-arranged group of players, and I'll do individual elements to help them improve. And they're like, we don't want to do that anyway. It's like, perfect.
Yeah. Well, you touched upon something there about the social element. I think what gets overlooked in analysis is that it is a very, very social world, because the relationship is so important. Mm-hmm. And you said there about how you garnered a bit of a bit of trust, or maybe a bit of credibility, or maybe a bit of excitement around coaches. But you know as well as I do that it can go the wrong way twice as fast, and it may never return, that relationship. So not something that you can teach in school, but something that I've tried to put on this course is, listen, when you go into an environment, it's like you've got almost like analyst principles that you've got to be able to be humble, be communicative, be respectful, pick the right moments, get people on side. How does an analyst, apart from taking the Modern Soccer Coach course, does an analyst learn that?
It's tough. You have to have a thick skin, and you have to be brave. And there's no hiding it. Coaches have their job on the line every week, and even when they're winning, which I found, the best coaches are so secure that they're like tunnel visioned. We're winning every single week, but unfortunately, not every coach is like that. Every time they win, they think, oh, that's us safe for another week. They have this mentality, unfortunately. But with that in mind, you have to just, you celebrate the team's wins, and then you just take a step back and just realize that sometimes you're going to be the punching bag, but it's not even going to be you. Like, if you're showing them the goals, for example, on the laptop, and they're thinking, what's he doing that for? And then like it might go off, and like you might have technical issues that always happens at the wrong moment. It's like, that's broken as well, like you can't do anything. You just like just have to take a step back, and you just have to like, well, he's angry, but he's not actually angry at me. And you just realize like okay, how can I help him? Like, and just to explain, it might be, gaff, that's terrible. I can't believe he's done that. That's not what you said. So you might, again, it's almost like Copland sandwich again, working up. And you try and just like get him back down to earth and just say, it'll be okay. We'll work on this on training. We'll be fine. If it still gets progressively worse, you just have to just learn to be quiet.
So interesting. What I fear for, I'm really optimistic about the analysis space in the next 10 years. I see you being the norm, so to speak. I think the football piece is going to become, as AI will flush out a lot of stuff, and now analysts will be expected to help on sessions with finances as well. That's where I see it going. But what I also think is really interesting is the fact that when you're in that environment and those people are under pressure, under stress, you've got to be able to empathize with that. And you communicated that really well there. But what I fear about an analyst, the area that I fear about, is that as education, as in like access to games, increases, and you know, now people are watching tactical footage and seeing a lot of it, is that I hope we don't walk into a stage where or enter an era of generation of analysts who think that it's actually easier to watch football than it is to play football. And, you know, I know you've played a bit yourself, and I just, I'm not saying that you have to play to be an analyst, but the level that you're looking up there, and I've seen analysts, I've heard analysts stand beside me and go, what's he doing? Mm-hmm. And you're looking like, listen, you can't be saying that out loud, you know?
Yeah. It's true, and the thing is, if you ever play a staff five-a-side, you'll be humbled. And I think, unfortunately, I don't want to name drop him, but he's actually my assistant. He got humbled quite a bit. You play a five-a-side, and he goes across in the grass, and he's like shanked one, and he's just got hit from all sides. It's like even players on his own team are saying, "No, can't do it." Like, the best analysts don't have to play, but the best, like, you'd even look at Mark Leyland, who's doing so much well in all this. It's how you come across. I think, like, how can I tell Charlie Austin how to score a goal? But I can, it's like asking him how. It's like, Charlie, I was thinking about this. I've seen this, but what's your opinion? Because I don't know I want to see what you have to say on this. Then but he doesn't even have to be Charlie with his record or like his phenomenal career. I might go to to like Tyree Shade or something. I was like, Tyrese, I've been looking at this, and I was looking at videos on like Mbappe and stuff like this. Am I mad to think this for you to do this? All of a sudden, what he's heard is Mbappe, me, and then I'm engaged him, I've got him. Or same thing, like from a defensive point of view, is like I might go up to my one of the defenders and be like, oh, he gets too tight here, doesn't he? And then he goes, yeah, he does. I wouldn't do that. I was like, oh, what would you do? And he's like, do that. And then all of a sudden he goes, okay, perfect. And then like, I've got this clip on you, but I'm not sure about showing you. And he goes, no, you can show me anything. Don't worry about it. All of a sudden you're back in the room. As long as you're like, I was going to show you something, but are you in the right headspace to like have a conversation with me? And he's like, all of a sudden they're like, yeah, I'm fine. And like, or if they're not, they're not. But at least you've started that straight away where they're like, or at least I know goes, oh, not today. And he goes, but tomorrow, Liam, I will tomorrow. I'm just not in the mood today. All of a sudden you're like, perfect, grand. It's going to be on my laptop forever, so we can just do another time. But you just, as an analyst, you have to be humble, definitely.
Yeah, you're playing down your skill set there. You've got a bag of clubs, and your question of, am I mad to think ... is a great hook.
Yeah,
you've that's what you said. The player thinks of the two, of the Mbappe and the. But what I hear is your hook to get in.
Yeah,
because your hook says, you know, am I mad? Meaning that they might say you are mad, which means that you've now taken a step, you know, oh, you're going to call me mad. That's all right. You know, it can just, it's a great conversation starter that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really, way more non-threatening than you need to do this.
Yep.
And I think hopefully we'll, granted, like I'm just guessing on this, but I'm just hoping that as analysis continues to develop, insights like that goes with it, because I think they're so important. Moving now, Ireland, when you're in that analysis role then with your country, you've got different people from different contexts and experiences with analysis. So I'm sure that when you roll into especially the youth camps, you've got some people who are used to it and that are living in it day to day, and some people that have barely any experience in it. How do you start with someone who's like, hey, listen, we're not doing that at my club.
Strip it all back, go back to goals. What's going to engage the youngest player ever? Me scoring a goal or me conceding a goal, which can be even worse, but like at least they'll listen. Why did that happen? Where did it start? So it depends, like, so the it depends on the result. If it's a debrief, which is the easiest one obviously to do, you've two options. You get them engaged at the start, goals at the start, or engaged at the end, goals at the end. And there's no right or wrong answer on that. And I've done both, or I've suggested both. Before that, it's logical sequence, like a story. Defending from the front, middle, back, transition to attack after that, as you're well aware, and then attacking from build, mid-third, final third. Engages everyone. I always, always try and do defending first because it's perceived as boring, but you've got them from the start about your defensive principles. Then you'll lose them in the middle, because you will, but if you have like good annotations and telestration, you might grab a few back in. Obviously, ask as many questions as possible. At times, especially if they're younger, because they're going to be an open group. He goes, right, Johnny, you're going to, here's a clip, watch it, pause, back on again. What happened in that clip? Now, instead of having a coach tell him or an analyst tell him the whole group, you've got the player telling the rest of the group. And you may not get the detail you want, but the meeting can't go longer than 15 minutes max. I would even say 10 minutes max, really. But you've engaged one, which hopefully engages Johnny's two mates. Because the first thing is Johnny's going to do after me, goes, what did they say there? Was that good? Was that bad? They already know. He's going to ask me about that. So you engage them. You engage those moments. And then you move on from there. What Jay Donahue does, which is fantastic, he has units, a huge sheet and you're allowed to write during a meeting. You're allowed to ask questions during a meeting. Write, have to write something. If you have nothing written on your sheet, you have to sing a song like a boy band at dinner. So when I say, I'll be on the laptop, I goes, 2 minutes left, fellas. Everyone starts scrambling because they don't want to start singing. But then they have to go through what's on their sheet. And if things are wrong, you discuss them. If things are right, fair play. And then all of a sudden you're going back, you're like, everyone's involved. It's base level zero. So like there might be a few lads at higher clubs or do different stuff, but I guarantee you they don't do the stuff we do. In terms of that level of communication and forfeit per se, because we never really make them sing. That's the hint and giveaway than that one. But it's just it engages everyone, and it works every single time.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Do you think I posted something a few weeks ago about, there was a thing I got from Kobe Bryant, had an individual video coach that he traveled with him and made a lot of headlines about, Kobe was so far ahead of it at the time, wasn't he? It was about 15 years ago when he was taking him to playoff games, individual scout. Do you think, we talked a little bit about AI, do you think players will eventually get to the stage where you could be offered a chunk of money to be someone's personal video assistant, or is that too far?
Yeah, I think I've had a few offers for cash in hand for it. don't tell the tax, but I've had a few offers of them ones, but sometimes you do it and sometimes you don't. It just depends on my workflow and stuff. But yeah, I think a lot of Premier League clubs have one now. I know very, he's a friend of mine who's an individual analyst for Kobe Mainoo. He's only 18. He is a one-to-one analyst who works very closely with him. They do meetings every 10 days, which is interesting. But it's what we've got 24/7 athletes now at like all levels, all disciplines. And I think it makes sense. If you're gonna spend maybe at a top club, you're gonna spend maybe 13 hours on the grass before your game. You're gonna do every single one of your meals in the week, bar one. You always have a cheat meal that I was aware after the game. You're gonna spend 6 days eating clean and perfect. You're gonna be in the gym 4 days. You're gonna do recovery 3. If you're not engaging your mind and your football side, your football development, like of your thought process and game intelligence, you're gonna be left behind. You're going to be left behind, especially of how technical the game is going and structurally and tactical it's going. It's like the biggest man's not always winning anymore. So it's all about like improving that element. And I think if you get someone that connects with you as an individual and a coach and is able to engage on that, it's that level of money and that level of business is going to go higher and higher.
Brilliant. All right, last couple, real random one. Ireland, I just finished Tony Cascarino's book.
Yeah.
You ever read that?
No, I haven't, not yet.
Oh, wow. Unbelievable. Nothing to do with analysis and very, very, a lot to do with psychology, by the way. Very, very interesting. But anyway, Ireland camps were what they were 20, 30 years ago, of course.
Yeah.
Well, interesting now, not about the partying and the drinking, but more on the, when you're in that camp, is the analysis available to the players? Like, are you almost sitting in a meal room and players can drop in and out, or is there a set time that you're doing those meetings? Or I'm trying to understand how formal is it when it's in those international breaks?
Every group that I've been with, bar one, and each, it all comes down to the coach on this one. It's up to the coach and how they want to structure it. But every I've done. When you're working through, you end up going through a lot of coaches, a lot of different age groups, because you're filling the gap. Because I was in university in Ireland, as I was just called in randomly, like 2 days' notice to be the analyst and stuff, which was fun because I was going to Estonia for 10 days and I had to tell my lecturer I wasn't going to do a deadline. But anyway, moving on. So each coach is different, but the best ones I've worked with and the ones I've always done well was unit meetings, pre-training. In the first few days, train, lunch, debrief the session with video. So it's a quick turnaround for me as an analyst. I don't get lunch typically, or I do it on the bus and I get it done, have a small bite to eat or whatever. but it's not clean analysis, is what I always describe. It's not like sit there for hours, perfect illustration. I might go on Sports Code and use Coach Mode and just highlight as the coach is speaking, green laser if it's a TV and stuff like that. Then you have chill out time, no more analysis after 6 o'clock. Players are shut off, done. Next morning again, same thing. Units, units, which is includes pre-training, lunch, and then debrief again the training. And it gets more, it just gets close to that. And as soon as it gets to minus one, no analysis pre. You save your day to get all your last bit of information stuff on the day of the game. And then you're like engaged them on everything. What Ireland do fantastic is they have a Sabutio board for set plays, which I absolutely love, and I'm trying to push over here. So everyone stands around the Sabutio board. Where are you for a corner? Everyone has a little man, puts them where I'm supposed to be. You fix it there, you learn. You move the ball, there's a free kick there. Where are we now there? And then everyone gets their little man and moves it. This is obviously starting 11 work, and they know they're starting 11. So they move it around. And that takes away having your meeting really long by having your set plays in it. Because your set plays could be in it, and it's like, it might only be 90 seconds of video, but with all the slides in, you could end up being in 4.5 minutes of being like, I know I'm there. And it's going to be on the wall in the dressing room anyway. But having that mini meeting before and putting it in your spots, and the subs knowing, well, if I'm coming on for him, I know where he goes. And if I'm coming on for him, I know where he goes. They may not nail down where they're going, but like just the goalkeeping coach or the set piece defensive set piece when they're attacking will tell them when they're coming on anyway. That's standard football, but at least they have the little goes, well, I know where he's at front edge, so if I come on for him, I know that. And it's a fantastic learning tool, which I think is fantastic. But with Ireland, it's always best practice and stuff of what I see. There's no stone gets unturned, and that probably comes down to I've got. You can probably have 60% of my meetings are already done 3 weeks before the camp. Because we know who we're going to play. We know their structures and everything. So all of the opposition stuff that goes into the unit meetings are done. The big ones is just the post-training. And because we've planned the sessions 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, in it, I know, and we've talked about it the day before, and on the bus on the way across as staff, I know the exact thing that Jim or what anyone wants as it's happening. So I have it clipped and ready to go. So I'm just doing quick illustrations or quick thing, and you go from there. And typically the structure of the session would be activation warm-up, straight into your main function, and then it might be technical and finishing. So all of a sudden I'll just be filming it, but I'll be working on the main bar, which is done second in line. So I'm already typically ahead before I'm done, you know, before all the lads are done. I have all the clips, I think. And then it's just working it out with the coach staff, and they have a 5 second breather after the session to say, I've got 5 clips. I want it down to 3 as an analyst. Which clips do you like? And then that's how it typically goes. But again, wow. It comes from confidence of your analyst, number one, and me understanding the coach. When I come into a new environment, and I do all this stuff, they're like, I need 10 minutes. I'm just done my session. And they're like, okay, I'm ready though. We're presenting in an hour.
there's so much in that. Well, what's really interesting, I had a conversation with this, with a coach the other day. I feel as if a lot of coaches want analysis, but aren't actually ready for it. Not mm-hmm. in terms of the information, but in terms of the processes. Mm-hmm. And I feel as if inefficiencies are rampant in the analysis world for the opposite of what you just talked about. I'm sure there's analysts listening to that going, 6 o'clock, nothing after 6. Please tell my head coach that. Because how many, sometimes these environments go, again, when it's a performance elite environment, you know yourself, bit of pressure, game a lot on it. You know, you have that final meeting with the players, 8 o'clock at night, you give them a bit of time, staff sit around and almost feel as if they have to add more analysis to the day.
Yeah.
Nothing worse.
No one's listening to you.
Oh, exactly.
I don't care. You could have a game from 4 years old and there's none of the players there and they wouldn't notice. They'd be like, oh, God.
Yeah. Last couple. Can you overload? Well, you obviously can. You can overload a team throughout the week on video. You can do too much.
Oh, 100%. 100%. When the game doesn't seem like the game, or you can smell it. You can smell it as well. You're in a dressing room 25 minutes before a game. If you don't have half your squad up for the game, and like everyone's different, obviously you've got the music boys in the corner, you've got your foam rollers in the middle, you've got your conversationists, the people who read the program, everybody's different. But you can look in their eyes before the game, and if they're not up for the game, I think that's on the analyst.
Oh, sometimes. Wow.
That's a big statement. Everyone will say it's on, well,
I blame the sports scientist or the goalkeeper.
Hey, the sports scientist will just give him extra caffeine and there'll be no excuse there. But I think you can blame to an extent the coach, to an extent, but if they're not up for the game, then there's too much information in the week, because you could drop any player into any dressing room at any moment with 5 minutes notice and say, go have fun, play a game of football. Every single one of them will clap their hands and go, this is fantastic. When the game doesn't sound like the game, or if I'm thinking about, oh, well, Johnny's right-footed, I need to show him on his left foot, but I also need to worry about the screening and going there, it doesn't seem fun. It's not engaging enough. So if you can't get your messages across indirectly and them too much video and stuff like that, and they're not up for it, you've lost them.
It must be great in the Ireland camps to get a little bit of insight into the detective work into what's happening in all of these other clubs' environments.
Yeah.
Do you, like, how open is it to, you know, do you get access? Do you have a network that you kind of try and get some tips on who else is doing what and stay on the cutting edge?
It's always a work in progress, but yeah, definitely. You have to be open to new ideas and you nip things and you steal things. And you actually, a few times I've given away things, which is perfectly fine. I'm quite open with that because I back myself as a person to show me as a person, also my analysis skills. But as long as you're engaging and players are seem to understand what they're doing and bringing it across the white line, then it's everything that works. I think there's getting less and less hidden gems in the game. There's less secrets, but it's with how you deliver them and ensure that they're able to bring them across and play and stuff like that. But the engagement from players to analysts now are becoming bigger and bigger. I think back in like a few years ago, even not even that long ago, it was always perceived as the geek in the corner. And like, I wouldn't mind that. I'm not even that good at laptops to have that tone, but you take and you move on. But now it's the first thing they want to know is they want to come over and see what, like, oh, did I do anything in the game? Is the manager going to come for me? It's like, no, you're fine. Or they're looking at goals themselves, for and against. They're looking at chances. Should I have done better there? Half time is like, I feel like I'm the most popular in the room at times because everyone's coming over and just seeing different elements of what they think and what I think as well, which is obviously like quite rewarding for me after a few years. But it's you try and steal what you can, but sometimes you back yourself as well in what you know.
On that halftime one, do you is that something where you're almost, hey, listen, I'm here if you need me, or is there something in the dressing room going on there that you're put to work?
Yeah, it's different. Last year I was in the gantry on the laptop and I was live coding and stuff like that. This year I've been on the bench with Huddle Replay with the iPad and stuff like that, and I have different playlists and I'm communicating upstairs with my assistant and things like that. But I've got a playlist set up for in possession, out of possession, transition, and then individuals. Simple as that. So whatever the coach or the manager wants for the first bit of this halftime, we'll go on the TV and he'll discuss about that point and go on that element. Then I'll have my little individual section where I'll just, like, after the manager's really spoken, I would listen to what the manager says, and then I'd like give him a thing here, just if you weren't clear, here's an example. because I know what the manager wants before he's even said it, because I'll be on the sideline now and he'd be going absolutely ballistic about something. He goes, well, I know he's going to be ballistic about that. I'm going to like clip that. So I know that he's going to want that. So then instead of the player being like, he's just going off me, he's like, he doesn't even know. Like, I try to do that, and he goes, oh, well, just giving you clarification. This is actually the facts and this is what's happened. Do you agree with the coach now? And he's like, oh, he's got a point. Oh, does he? So it's like, it's given that clarification. It's almost taken away the emotion of a potential bollocking or a potential point, but also backing up the coach's point to say, do this now because you didn't and it cost us, or we can definitely continue doing this and we'll get more success. And the biggest one is like finding the opposite six. I speak about so much, but especially because there's so many people in a 4-3-3 with a single pivot, a one. If you get to these outside where that's a center forward dropping down or the opposite eight, finding this opposite six, it's like every time I was like, here's the trigger, because I'm talking to them about it all week. So then when it comes to it, it's like, well, the trigger for the single pivot to screen is when the center half steps out. So don't crowd the space. You go on the outside to stretch them, and then you might get an up back through from it. But it's just like, I just like get that clear trigger and that clear picture, and I show my midfielder, show my center half. Now, that's your trigger. That's when he steps. That's your penetrative ball. And that's, and it's keeping it simple. It's not absolutely, I'm not trying to get them to do anything in like crazy, because you need more time to coach that. It's just giving them clear pictures to hopefully break the opposition structure.
Well, fantastic. Fantastic. Liam, that was tremendous.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Soccer Coach Podcast. For more coaching topics, sessions, and resources, head on over to Coach Kernin on Facebook or visit the website at www.modernsoccercoach.com.